even with the Democrats and Republicans, when we were working on like the Healthy Michigan plan, I knew I had the more liberal legislators, but I didn't have the conservative ones. So I spent my time.
Even though you were in a Republican administration.
In a Republican administration, Republican House and Senate, I spent my time with the most conservative Republican because I knew I had the Democrats, but therefore he could be a spokesperson and say, yeah, this makes some sense. And then people will follow him. And it just amazes me where people are just always afraid to talk to somebody who thinks differently than they do. And I think we've got to start there.
This episode of Vital Conversations is produced and distributed by Be Connected, a social media management firm in Northeast Wisconsin.
Hi, my name is Tim Cohen, and welcome to Vital Conversations, presented by Focus Solutions. Here we talk to leaders in healthcare about what's going on in their business. And today, we're going to take a little bit of a different spin because I am very privileged to be joined by a longtime friend. I would never say either one of us were old friends. We're longtime friends, Jim Haveman. Jim, welcome to Vital Conversations.
Hey, Tim, it's a joy to see you and a joy to be here.
Awesome. The reason I wanted to talk to you, Jim, is you have a very, very interesting and unusual background in healthcare. You've done a lot of things over your career, which I want you to summarize. But we're going to come back and talk about some of the lessons you've learned about bringing people together. So to put that in context, give people a quick rundown on your professional background. Let's work our way up to where you ended up in Michigan, and then we'll pick up what I think is one of the most fascinating healthcare assignments anybody in the world's ever had. But get us to you and Governor Engler with your story.
Well, what's interesting about it, I was an accounting business economic major at Calvin in the 60s, and I went into social work as a master's degree. So I'm one of the few social workers who really understands a budget and management issue. So my career quickly went into being a director of a small agencies in Grand Rapids, and they just got bigger and became more statewide and nationwide in child welfare and drug abuse. And then I ran the community mental health programs. And then I started working for John Engler as his director of mental health. And then we merged Medicaid into it in the 90s. And it became the Medicaid was included in public health. And then I did my own company for several years. And then Rick Snyder in 2012 called me to come back. So I went back. And it's just been a great career running the same department. Had a budget of $18 billion. And between Engler and Snyder, I spent a year in Iraq as the acting minister of health.
Well, let's talk about that Iraq thing, and then we're going to get back to some of the lessons learned. Iraq, tell us about that phone call and what that led to, and what did you do in Iraq?
Well, the phone call came from the White House. This was shortly after the invasion in early 2000. Basically, they needed common sense people to go out and manage things. And they had a lot of the Eastern elites out there who didn't know anything about how to run anything. So they needed somebody to come out and be the acting minister of health. Now, what I want you to hear and others, and you know this, is that you can be awfully skilled here in the United States in management and healthcare, and it's very transferable to other countries. You just got to be accommodate to the culture and its people and listen and learn and surround yourself with people who understand the local culture. But we have so much to offer in regards to technology and skills and management. I can remember going to Africa and bringing Peter Drucker books because people were just eager to learn about management. So it was a great assignment. And after 3 months,
you were basically rebuilding the Iraqi healthcare system after the war, right? You and your team and transferring that back to the Iraqis.
Yeah. Within 3 months, we turned it over to an Iraqi physician and we worked ourselves out. So 11 months later, I left. And we were the first one of 26 ministries to turn it over to the Iraqis. And that's so important because you just can't run something in another country for an extended period of time.
So between growing up on the government side of healthcare and ending up, you know, like I said, an $18 billion organization in Michigan, where you were both you were a payer, you were a provider, you were an administrator, you were a regulator, you kind of had a 360-degree view.
And we're going to talk about that working for a Republican governor during the rollout of Obamacare, kind of what that meant. And then you go to Iraq, where you literally have people on different sides with real bullets shooting at each other. The topic I'd like to dig into today, which is a little different than what we normally do, to take advantage of your wisdom and that experience, is in healthcare, a lot of times we're trying to bring people together who, at least in the beginning, appear to have differing objectives and agenda. Whether we're negotiating a managed care contract, we're doing a JV with the hospital, we're all those things, at least at the beginning, it feels like you and I are going to fight and arm wrestle. And that's how a lot of those things get framed up. So you've lived in that world your entire career and have learned a lot of lessons about how to think about that differently and bring people together.
Well, I use a couple phrases in my career. One is, if you think you're a cart and three people are think you're a horse, it's time to saddle up. And the other one was, I got five battles and three bullets. So I'm willing to lose two. So I've always had an attitude of compromise, and I've always had an attitude of listening. And I've always had an attitude of not or, but and. And as you know, that makes such a difference when you approach a conversation to say, look, we're in this together. Now let's pick the best ideas we have and let's try to work on them. But let's not do 20. Let's do four that we know we can accomplish and show the legislature or show the Iraqi government. When I got to Iraq, we had a budget of $16 million for 26 million people because dictators get rid of healthcare and educational systems. When I left, it was $1 billion all Iraqi money. Today, it's several billion. But it's that bringing people together and then finding mission and purpose. And so often you go into something, you don't spend any time in mission and purpose, and then that leads to a strategic thinking and a plan. So the whole enterprise kind of knows where you're going, and you're very transparent about it. And I've always kind of practiced that type of stuff.
Did you find that idea of centering around mission and purpose in a place like Iraq versus negotiating a contract on behalf of the state of Michigan with big payers? What were the similarities in that approach, and what were some of the differences you had to navigate between?
Well, we all know the best situation is when both people feel they walk out of the room and they won. So I think I've always tried to find that. Even with the Democrats and Republicans, when we were working on like the Healthy Michigan plan, I knew I had the more liberal legislators, but I didn't have the conservative ones. So I spent my time.
Even though you were in a Republican administration.
In a Republican administration, Republican House and Senate, I spent my time with the most conservative Republican because I knew I had the Democrats, but therefore he could be a spokesperson and say, yeah, this makes some sense. And then people will follow him. And it just amazes me where people are just always afraid to talk to somebody who thinks differently than they do. And I think you've got to start there.
What did you find would cause someone those conservative legislators to anchor on their position, not be able to open up and think about compromise? Was it fear? Was it power, reputation? What were you trying to get them past?
Well, it often was I had to give them cover back home because the people who didn't understand, it's like I think the health system should be absolutely alarmed right now with the $850 billion cut that's coming in Medicaid and what that's going to mean for payers and what it's going to mean for hospitals and primary health care and rural health centers and fairly qualified health centers. We're entering some troubled water, but I guess troubled water bothers me, but you can navigate it. But one of the things we've done in public health and healthcare not very well is to prove that for a dollar, you get more than a dollar's back. And the other thing, Tim, I've always felt strong about is spending time with the consumers. I always spent 50% of my time outside the office. That's a rule of thumb. Visiting programs, listening to people, walking down streets of neighborhoods. And I always made the people nervous in the hospital, in the office, because they want me to be there so they can control you. But I would get out, and that's where I got my best ideas. And when I came back, I was full of stuff. Well, this isn't working. And there was a real test of time going on all the time. And I don't think enough people do that. They just stay in the C-suite,
Well, too many leaders, the only information they get has been filtered and processed three or four levels before it gets to them. They're not getting raw data, seeing it with their own eyes and ears to be able to make their own decisions. So you guys, you're running Michigan. President Obama gets elected. Obamacare passes. Talk to us a little bit about kind of how that decision-making process went. Like, are we going to expand? We know some states took the expansion, some states did not. Again, you're in a Republican administration with the Democratic White House. What was that experience like?
Well, the first day on the job, I got a call to the governor's office, and he said, I want to talk to you about Medicaid expansion. He didn't tell me his position, and that was typical Rick Snyder. He put me in there with some of his key staff and said, what's your position on Medicaid expansion? I looked at him right in the eyes and says, I'm all for it. He says, so am I. So then I knew I had the governor's support, which makes a huge difference in a Republican House and a Senate. So then it was just a matter of vote counting and really just working hard to educate people. And yet the other thing I had to do, Tim, and people forget about this. People don't understand. They don't understand the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. There's 20,000 rules and pages of rules in Medicaid. It's so confusing. I had to go one-on-one with small groups of legislators, two, three at a time, and just educate them on 101 about what Medicaid is and how it impacts hospitals and people and the working poor. And then they thought, oh, I got this person who runs this restaurant. They don't have health care under this. Will they get health care? I said, yeah. Well, they said, what's wrong with that? And then I showed them 90% of the money come from the feds, and they began to get educated. But we don't spend enough time just basically educating legislators.
So I assume the first time you did that vote count, it was probably not in your favor. What were the arguments that got that Republican legislature in Michigan to come around to expanding Medicaid?
It helped small business back home. I got the small business people on board. The hospital association lobbied strong because Medicaid expansion pays a lot of bills that were not being paid. So they were important lobby. Michigan State Medical Society. So we had a kind of a full orb approach. You know, we were doing our vote, but it came down to one vote in the Senate, then we did get it, then we got it. So it was very dramatic. But in the House, we got a good number of Republicans came on board because they saw the benefit back home. That's why I think a lot of the cuts going on in Washington right now, it hasn't been felt back home. And when it being felt back home, that's when things really begin to change.
It also sounds like there was lots of personalization, right? How do I go from some abstract concept, like you said, to the restaurant owner in this town, in your district? So with that, flip that over to the Iraq experience. Here you are, you come in behind the U.S. Army. You've got every day had to be a surprise in terms of what you turned over and what you found. But you were highly resource constrained there. What'd you say, 16 million for a population of 20 million? How did you guys begin to tackle that problem?
Same way I tackled it when I walked in the door of Department of Mental Health, where you got 15,000 staff who thought that John Inger wasn't going to win, you know, and you're the new kid on the block, and you just can't come in as an arrogant person like you got all the answers, but you know you've got a history of skill, and you just go around, walk through the buildings, talk to people, start to identify leaders, start to see what's working, what's not working. You don't try to do things within the first 30 days that shake up the whole system. You got to get transparency. You got to get trust. And then you got to start including people and really what's the mission and purpose and what this is all about while you're working closely with the governor's office and their agenda. And I always respected, I worked for a governor or a president like I did in Iraq, that you got to respect what they want to do. I mean, you're their agents of change. But in Iraq, it was the same thing. I did a lot of walk around talking to people. The top 30 people had been eliminated by the U.S. coalition. So I had to find new leaders and, you know, if you really look around in any industry or corporation, you'll find emerging leaders who just haven't had a chance. And then you give them a chance to soar and you give them the training and mentoring that goes with it. And they'll go far past where the people who were they reported to before. No question about it.
But, Jim, you referenced you guys were the first ministry to turn it back to the Iraqis. You moved it at lightning speed to not only rebuild it, but to rebuild the leadership. Right. How were you able to go that fast?
Just by working 7 days a week, 6 days a week, and building a team. No, I had my own security team while I was there, so I was very mobile. I traveled to Basra, to Kurdistan, to Fallujah. I was all over the place, not only getting to know the doctors, visiting them when they're in the homes, but the nurses and the line staff. I'd walk through the building, you know, and sit and chat with people. And I'm one of those who tries to create a buzz. I mean, you know it, Tim. When you go talk to somebody in a particular area where nobody's been in 20 years, that just goes through the system. And we didn't have an internet, we didn't have computers, so we had it was just word of mouth. And I was transparent, and I admitted my strengths, I admitted my weaknesses, and other cultures respect that, and I was respectful of their culture too.
Awesome. So you referenced earlier the potential, you know, pending cuts that are coming down. I want to close with this. So given your history in the government, understanding kind of how this ripples through the system, what would you say to healthcare providers, particularly a lot of our audience are, you know, independent physician practices? This something is about to hit for some practices, and it'll be bigger. What would you suggest to them in the next 30, 60, 90 days on how they navigate through this?
Well, we got turbulent times coming. You know, a lot of programs like Medicare and Medicare, we were told they weren't going to be cut, but it looks like they are. The 340B programs, research, education of physicians and nurses. I think that people need to advocate and talk in their communities about what these safety net programs are and how important they are to the economy and to the culture. You got to tie it to the health of the community. And a healthy community is an economically strong community. You cannot have a good economic community without a good healthcare system. And I think corporations know that, but it is not articulated well in the media. And too often the healthcare profession is way too timid to speak up, and they depend on their lobbying or their association in Washington. But I think it's time that people change that and really start educating and informing people as to the impact that will have on people's lives and also on the economy of our country.
Awesome. Jim, thanks for taking some time today. Again, a fascinating career. You've gotten to do some really, really cool things and made a lot of difference, not just in the state of Michigan, but obviously around the world with your time in Iraq. Appreciate you as a friend, but also especially you just being with us today.
Well, I feel the same way, Tim. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Vital Conversations is presented by Focus Solutions. Focus provides integrated IT data and software services to physician practices all across the United States. To hear more stories about physician practice leaders and what they are doing, subscribe to Vital Conversations wherever you get your podcast.